Broadcasting live from the Business Radio X studios in Atlanta, Georgia, it's time for Atlanta Business Radio, spotlighting the city's best businesses and the people who lead them.
All right, welcome to Atlanta Business Radio. This is Lee Cantor. We are broadcasting in the studios in Atlanta, and you're usually hearing Ryan Redhawk, but today he is at Emory working for the folks at WIT, doing some shows over there. But today's going to be a great show. We're going to start off with Mike Stark. He is with American Financial Advisors. And then we're going to get to Josh Seides, and he's a young entrepreneur with Techno Academy. First up, Mike Stark. Welcome, Mike.
Hey, good morning.
So you're with American Financial Advisors. Can you share a little bit about what you guys are up to?
I've been in business 26 years. Started back in 1990-91. We manage people's money. We do financial planning. We do wealth management. We've got several hundred million dollars under management. Didn't start out that way. Initially, was just...
You just had your in-laws' money?
The actually first client was the... I'm a retired Marine also. First client was the widow of a friend, Marine. And the first client was a couple hundred thousand dollars.
How'd you decide to get into that business from being a Marine and you're also a pilot?
Right. No, my dad was a high school principal up in upstate New York and used to do a stock course with a group of the kids at the high school every year, about 25 or 30 kids. It was an elective. So I got interested with my snow shoveling money, obviously upstate New York. Snow shoveling money, lawn mowing money, paper route money, and understood that putting it into equities or stocks was a better growth vehicle than just a passbook savings account.
Mm-hmm. And then, so, you know, that has ups and downs. You must have had some wins early on, right?
Well, the first three things I ever heard, IBM, Coke, and GE were all in the town that I grew up in Binghamton. At the time, they're gone now.
Right.
But so those were, because they were local, because you could read about them and keep up with them, those are the first three things I ever purchased as a kid. It just kept that interest going, got through high school, went to SUNY Binghamton, up New York, obviously, right there in my hometown, and went straight into the Marine Corps after graduation. Got my wings and... stayed 10 years active and 10 reserve, but got hired by Delta in 1987. So I've been a captain with Delta now for 20, I guess I'm into my 28th, 29th year now. And sitting as an engineer initially, and when you first get hired, you're not a captain. You
know, really?
No. Be nice, but now you're first, normally a second officer. You're on the panel behind the first officer and the captain. Just listening to guys talk at Delta, it was like their 401k money was going to be beer money, different from their, you know, obviously above and beyond their pension. And I realized that a lot of these guys should be doing something more productive with their 401ks because they were contributing generally the max every year, but they weren't paying a whole lot of attention and there weren't that many choices. So I just realized, I went to Schwab and said, I don't have any clients yet, but there's a lot of potential here.
Right.
So Schwab said, all right, well, we'll set up a platform for you. And as you bring clients in, you'll grow. And so after, I don't know how long, I worked out of the house for about 8 or 9 years. All of a sudden I had 10 million under management and then 10 became 20 and then 20 became 50 million. And then 50 million became 100 million, and then 100 million has grown to over 500 million. But it's, you know, it's an overnight success. 26 years
later. But now talk about the, you know, you're working as a pilot. That's your day job.
Yes, but I bid reserve, and we have a system at Delta where if you're a reserve pilot, you're on call if there's somebody's in a car accident, a death in the family.
Right.
So generally, I might fly 6 to 8, maybe 9 days a month.
Uh-huh.
And sometimes you don't get called, but you still get paid because you're
available.
You're available. A lot of guys don't like being on reserve because they commute. They might live in North Carolina or Tennessee or Florida. So, but if you live in Atlanta and you're based in Atlanta like I am, It's okay. I mean, I'm always ready to go. Now, if I'm on short call, I'm 2 hours. I have to be there within 2 hours mm-hmm. to the airport to go, be ready to go. If I'm on long call, it's 12 hours.
But the mentality of being an employee of Delta as opposed to being an entrepreneur and running your own business is a different way of looking at your day, isn't it?
Well, it gave me the ability to, and something I've done for the entire 26 years that we've been managing money, it gave me the ability to start out with low fees, which you're now seeing the entire industry is going towards right. lower and lower fees. Well, my business model started that way from the very beginning. And even with all the employees at Delta, whose 401ks we manage, we have a very unique fee structure with 401ks. If someone has zero to 100,000, their flat fee is $100 a year. If they have between 100 and 500,000, it's a flat fee of $200 a year. Anything over 500,000 is $300 a year. Very simple, low cost. And what that does, which people really don't understand the true power of compounding, if you leave thousands of dollars that don't go out in fees every year in someone's account, and they work with you for 20 or 30 years of a career, and then they're going to be retired for 20 or 25 years, but you've left all that money in there compounding on their side of the table, it's a huge number.
And that the average person doesn't realize that, right?
No, and then when they retire, we go to a different fee structure where after, they may work with us for 20 years, but then we finally get a more reasonable fee structure. But even it is very low in the industry. We're at 1% on 500,000 and 0.5% on everything over 500,000, which if you look around, a lot of people are paying 1.5%, 2.5% to have their money managed.
And then sometimes that is just, those people are just placing it in funds and stuff that have their own fee structure, right?
Oh, absolutely. That's something, if you ask people what they paid for their house, they can tell you. Ask them what they paid for their car, their vacation, their clothes, their children's education. Ask them what they're paying to have their money managed. It's like a deer in the headlights. It's not that they don't care. They honestly don't know. They don't.
But that's part of the industry though, isn't it? To kind of like, I don't want to say hide it, but they're not kind of transparent about all the different fees.
That's the perfect word. It's not as transparent as you would hope. And it's not.
It's like going to the dry cleaner. Like, you have to get the stuff clean. You don't really know what anything costs until the bill comes at the end of the day.
Right. But you got to do it, right? Yeah, exactly. So it's not as transparent. And is it intentional? Sometimes you certainly feel like it is, especially right. when, the old joke about people don't buy annuities. They're sold annuities. We don't do annuities just mm-hmm. because it's such a high cost structure internally. And you can do the same thing with just a very well-diversified portfolio. And all they do is turn around and take your money and invest in the stock market and the real estate market anyway, and certainly bonds as well. But people don't realize if your real rate of return after inflation is only running about 4 or 5%, let's say, in a truly a diversified portfolio, but you're giving up 2% of that every year to fees and costs, like you just said. Mutual funds, advisors that use solely mutual funds, there's an expense ratio there of 1 to 1.25%. Some are lower, 0.7, 0.8. But then an advisor will throw another 1 to 1.25 right. on top of that. And now you're at 2, 2.5% before you even break even.
Right. And then with inflation too, you're behind.
Exactly. So our fee structure, which we started with a long time ago, is probably 10 years ahead of the curve and has been all along.
Now, when a person is considering, changing wealth advisors, they're usually going from something to you, right? They already have somebody. They're not going from nothing to you, right?
Well, most of our clients do come in via word of mouth. Mm-hmm. Some have not had an advisor previously. But a lot of our, I'm going to say half of our clients come to us, maybe a little bit more, because they find out about us. And then when they do the comparison of fees elsewhere to what we're doing, even if we had the exact same rate of return as a Wells Fargo or a Morgan Stanley or a Merrill Lynch, now look at the fee structure. And when you leave 1 to 1.5% on their side of the table, and they've got 100,000, 500,000, a million, they're big numbers.
Now, when a person is making that shift, though, isn't it typically at a point where like the market crashed or something bad happened where they all of a sudden start paying attention to what things are and what they could be?
That is definitely one of the triggers that, that occurs. You will get more calls, it seems like. Now, when the market's just cruising along and...
Right. Well, everybody's got a good system when, you know, the market's going up every week.
True. True. But when there's a correction... And remember, one thing, again, not very well understood, during any given year, you know what the normal correction is of anybody's account? Plus or minus 14%. And that goes all the way back to World War II. Mm-hmm. You can look at the numbers. That's a normal, but when it happens like it's happened this past January, all at once,
right,
that gets everybody's attention. Even the ones that are not nervous Nellies, even they'll kind of perk up a little bit and go, okay, where are we?
What's, yeah, when you get that statement.
Well, but I've always told them, if you have a well-diversified portfolio, we were ready for this correction before it ever happened. And it's true. I mean, if you look at the numbers right now, our portfolios are down about half of what the market's down. We're down like everybody else. I mean, unless you're in cash and or you just got lucky, right? You got a windfall from an inheritance or something and just hadn't invested it yet. But if you haven't invested it yet, now's a great time to start, you know, even if you're nervous, it's a good time to start tiptoeing in. Look at just energy. If you were just to buy an energy index, it's down 50 to 60%. Right. How wrong are you going to be if you invest in something that we all need? Oil's not going away.
Right.
Natural gas, all the components that make up the energy sector, including the pipelines, including the drillers, all the things that go into the energy sector. It's down 50, 60%. It doesn't matter where you look.
They don't usually ring a bell when they hit the bottom, right?
No.
That's not how it works?
No, not at all. No, but when you're down like you're down now, and when there's a 10 or 12% correct, like right now, I think the NASDAQ's down 16.5%. I know the Dow's down about 8.5%, the S&P 500 about 10%, 10.5%. That's a significant enough correction. It's not a bear market. You know, the official bear market would be down 20%. So we haven't hit bear market territory. But even if we do hit a brief bear market territory, bull markets last three times longer than bear markets. Bear markets are much shorter than bull markets as well. The average bear market, 18 months. 18 months goes by pretty fast,
right?
Especially the older you get.
Too fast.
Exactly.
Now, when you're working with a client, are you customizing the investments to the risk tolerance of the individual, or do you have kind of a philosophy for your firm?
You try to do that. You try to determine, and you can tell with you can do the survey that's, you know, give them 30 questions. And you know, if you go to Vegas, what would you do? Would you prefer to have your house paid? There's different things that will give you a general indication of a person's risk tolerance, but you truly don't see their real risk tolerance until there's a correction. People will tell us they're aggressive, they're really moderate, and people will tell us they're moderate or really conservative. So you try to get as close as you can to that. But I always tell people, if you want to outpace inflation and taxes over your lifetime, you have got to have some money into the stock market. And I joke, I say, look, and you go, as soon as Walmart, Johnson & Johnson, Merck, Pfizer, Exxon, Apple, Microsoft, Procter & Gamble, GE, as soon as they all go out of business and Walmart and the,
right,
and the Home Depot parking lots are empty, okay, maybe, you know, we'll get out of the market. But
because ultimately, aren't you investing in kind of America?
Absolutely.
I mean, are you bullish in America? Do you think America's going to be around for a while or not?
Absolutely. Absolutely. Even if Trump does get elected. Actually, so, you know, his numbers are getting stronger and stronger.
Now, if you are an individual, maybe, I guess your sweet spot is retirement age or 40s, 50s. Is that who your typical client is when you engage them?
Oh, God. You know, we've got the children of our clients now that are opening Roth IRAs, mm-hmm. and we don't charge any fee on that until they get over 20, 25,000 just to get them going and get them excited about the fact that their money really can grow. But probably our typical client is between 45 and 65, yes.
Now, who should be on their team?
Well, you do want someone, you don't invest because of taxes.
Right. Well, let's put aside, okay, I know I need a wealth manager. Who else do I need? I need a CPA.
You need someone to do your taxes. You need someone to take a look at your insurance needs, which generally is life insurance. And if you keep it simple, life insurance is required. So if you die, your wife doesn't have to move. The kids don't have to leave the school they're in, and you can cover your children's education beyond that. But you need an estate. Now, some estates are very simple. So you may need a trust, you may not. Estate planning attorney. You should have someone to manage, obviously, the portfolio, financial advisor.
Who's the quarterback of this team?
It generally would be the financial advisor that has gone through the CFP program. And we always say the CFP program is an inch deep and a mile wide. Mm-hmm. You understand insurance, you understand taxes, you understand estate planning, you understand investment management. So really the financial advisor. Now, it also could be a CPA, but generally
they're not as fun as wealth.
I won't say they're very conservative and boring, I think the financial advisor generally would be considered the quarterback, and it just makes sense because he brings all those other elements together.
Right. And then do you help your clients kind of put this team together? Is that part of the services you provide?
We certainly have all that. We have all those players. Now, sometimes they've got someone, by the time they come to you, they already have someone that does their taxes. They already have someone who they bought a term life insurance policy from. They may not have done long-term care. And a lot of, it's so funny with long-term care. First of all, you look at the gene pool, the family. But a lot of people who you would think would need long-term care have enough money where they're self-insured. Mm-hmm. They may buy a long-term care policy to offset what might be spent during a 3 or 4 year stay in a nursing home. But the people who need long-term care a lot of times don't have the money to pay the premium.
Afford it, right.
It's kind of a catch-22 when it comes to long-term care.
And the best
care.
Way to kind of assess your situation is just go to your family reunion.
Yes.
Look around.
Well, smokers, drinkers, you know, there's so many factors that go into, but really, truly, how long did your mom live? How long did your dad live? Mm-hmm. I mean, really, and were they in a home of any sort? And for how long? Is there Alzheimer's in the family? You know, the general stay in a nursing home where you actually require care on average is about 2.5 to 3 years. But people are living longer. Average female now, 87, 88 years old. And the average male, we're closing that 10-year gap now. Average male's living to be 83 to 84. But remember, it has doubled since 1900. The average age of a lifespan in 1900 was about 46 to 48 years old.
Wow, that's amazing.
Mostly agriculture, mostly farmers. And
they were eating all the healthy food.
Well, and they were, that's true. True.
They were right farm to table.
Yeah, but they worked until they died. Mm-hmm. You know, unfortunately, that's some people's retirement plan, too. I just work until I die because Social Security is not going to cover it all.
Right.
Most people take Social Security early at 62 because they have to, not because they want to.
Right. And that's probably not the best strategy.
It's not. If you wait till 66 or 65 in 10 months, which a lot of the baby boomers have, it's a 28 to 30% bump, about 7 or 8% a year. And you could never guarantee someone that they would make 7 or 8% a year in their portfolio for that period of time. So, remember, COLAs, cost of living allowance, goes with Social Security. So Social Security is going to be around. The one that's going to be in trouble because baby boomers are living so long now is Medicare.
Right. They're going to have to do something about that. Now, for your potential client, what is the best way to learn more about what you got going on?
Give us a call or go to the website. The website's www.afainvestments.com. That's Alpha, Foxtrot Alpha, investments.com.
And you do a good job with Delta people and veterans?
About 3/4 of our clients are Delta employees. We manage a lot of their 401ks. We manage a lot of the retirement accounts of our retired flight attendants and captains. A lot of military. You know, Delta was heavily military when it hired back in the 70s and 80s. And now it's more of a balance now between civilian pilots and military pilots. But I'm a retired Marine, Lieutenant Colonel after 20 years. I retired back in 97. But a lot of my buddies that are with Delta, we manage their money, and they're both retired military or former military. Maybe they didn't retire.
And rumor has it you're working on a book?
Yes. I wrote an article 10, 12 years ago called The Satisfaction Dividend.
And then 10 to 12 years later, there's a book coming from that?
Well, just recently, last year, 2015, it was recommended that I make a book out of that article. That's why I hadn't really thought about it that mm-hmm. way. But it's a good subject to cover because it basically focuses on invest in what you're passionate about. And I use numerous examples about passion. And I say, if you're a skier, you get the best boots, the best poles. If you're a cook, go to Williams and Sonoma.
It sounds like the Peter Lynch book.
Well, it's more about don't skimp when it comes to, it kind of goes to the philosophy, don't buy the lousy tool three times.
Right.
Buy the good tool once.
Exactly. And be done.
Right. But it's, again, there's numerous examples in that article that says, if you're passionate about this, go.
And you know it the best because you know the ins and outs of it, right?
Well, and go first class on the things that you spend the most time and have the, and then be frugal or, you know, not cheap, but be frugal in other areas, but don't go cheap on the things that you really, really, truly love.
Including your family.
Exactly. Well, one of the first examples is your children's education, because I say, if you educate them, they don't come back.
That's good investment advice.
Right.
All right, let's end on that. Well, thank you so much, Mike. And that's American Financial Advisors, and that's what, AFA?
AFAinvestments.com. You can Google it. You can call us 770-977-2434. We're based right up in Marietta. Easy to get to off of I-75, but give us a call, go to the website, and we'd be glad to talk to you. There's no fee to meet with us ever. You can sit down with us for a couple hours, go over your situation, and there's, again, no fee to do any of that.
Good stuff. Well, thank you so much for being part of the show. Just hang in there. We're going to learn about Josh and what he's up to with Technocademy.
All right.
Josh, welcome.
Hi, welcome.
Did you learn something?
I did,
a lot. You're going to move your money over to... Mike?
If I had some more money, maybe.
Look, you got to start somewhere. He's got no fee to start.
Yeah, that would be good.
And I get a small commission for telling you that. Just, I want to be transparent. So, Josh, you're in high school. People may not know that, obviously, but people may know that because you've been like all over the place. You're written up in newspapers, magazines. The Alpharetta named you. You won an award there, right?
Yeah. Yes.
So, how'd this all occur?
Yeah, well, for many years before I started the organization, I'd always be helping my own grandparents with technology. I have a couple who live in New York and then one who lives here in Atlanta. So every time I go to visit, I'd always be just working with technology. They'd be like, Josh, you know, how do you get this new iPad to work or something like that? So, and I knew that my grandparents weren't the only ones who were having trouble with the new technology. So, you know, I did some more research on that, talked with some of my other friends and their grandparents, and decided to take action, start a nonprofit to kind of address this issue on a more national basis.
So now the issue is that the seniors have a challenge with technology, right? So that was your mm-hmm. problem. And then, so what's your way of solving this problem?
Yeah, so we try to come up with a lot of different solutions to try and help senior citizens and veterans learn technology. What we started with, and we still continue to do today, is bring in some high school and middle school students to kind of run one-on-one and classroom lessons. We're trying to foster the intergenerational activity, especially because high school students especially are the ones who are always on their phones pretty much 24/7.
Yeah, I saw you on your phone the whole time Mike was talking.
And during school. And
you were probably helping some senior, right, with an iPad issue?
Yeah, definitely. Yeah, so we're always up to date on everything related to technology. So I always thought and still believe that high school students are.
But how do you interact with them? Where they're in their house or they're in their assisted living.
Yeah. Well,
how are you getting to them?
Well, we hold lessons.
You can't text them.
Yeah.
You can't text them. They can't hear the phone.
Well, we try to work through some of the senior locations that our seniors go to a lot, either through like living homes, assisted living.
Right.
We go through our recreation centers like in Newtown Park, in OC, and like the libraries, YMCAs. We hold lessons there. They talk to the seniors directly since they already have like members and, you know, people who frequent.
So they show up?
Yeah. We've had classes ranging from like two seniors all the way to like 40 or 50 before.
Wow.
So it's kind of varied.
Now, is this just an Atlanta-based thing or are you doing this all over the place?
Well, I started the organization in 2012 in my freshman year, and starting a couple summers ago, we started doing lessons just in like Alpharetta and Roswell. And then we kind of expanded since then. Right now we have 8 chapters in different parts of the country. Also started by high school students.
How did that happen?
Well, most of them have been just some of like the other high school contacts that I know, either from like conferences or some other meetups. We have one in like Palo Alto, which is next to Stanford. And I met that high school girl through a conference that I was at. So
then she started a chapter where she was?
Yes. And they hold like in-person lessons in their local areas.
Same thing. They're going to the libraries. They're going to the assisted livings. And then they have like regular scheduled times, like Wednesdays at 5, they show up and they help for an hour or something?
Yeah, our lessons are like once a week or once every other week at different places, depending on the place. And yeah, since we started with the lessons, we've also tried to come up with some other projects that might benefit other learning styles. So in 2014, in the fall, we made a 68-page pocket guide, which is kind of like a step-by-step tutorials written out for just the basic technologies like Facebook and cell phones and iPhones and everything like that. And
so how do they access that?
Well, we partner with United Way chapters in different cities, and we sent them directly to those.
So in print, right?
Yeah, in print.
Good idea.
We sent them to United Way chapters, and those chapters knew like which senior centers and where the seniors were in their own cities. So they just distributed it locally.
And that's a good idea to get that information out to them. What is the common mistake that seniors make on and off?
Yeah, well, I mean, I guess like before they even get to the iPhone, I think there's just a misconception that, you know, it's like really hard to learn. And I mean, it is, since it's always changing and everything. But I think if a senior is like willing to, you know, get into it and realize that like the major benefits that technology can bring, that they can, you know, reconnect with their family, they can video conference with
right. There's a lot of benefits from technology, but they just get intimidated by it.
Yeah, like they just like they've never been exposed to it before, so they think based on, you know, what they've heard about that it'll be impossible to learn, when they need the right like help and tutoring to just get acquainted with it, and then they'll.
So, what's the first thing you teach someone?
Well, we try to vary a lot based on what the individual wants to learn, what they need, and what right. they already have. But most of our help focuses around iPhones and iPads.
So like if you're teaching someone an iPad, how do you begin that lesson?
Well, what we do is, depending on the size, we usually do like if it's like not too many people, we try to do one-on-one. So for like high school students, have individual, you know, tutors just help out wherever right. they can, if they just ask questions and see what they already know. And usually, I guess it just begins with texting and video conferencing. Texting is really hard, I guess, for a lot of seniors to kind of understand.
That's a bridge too far, right?
Yeah. Well, I mean, once they get a hang of it, it's really useful.
Unless you had like a rotary phone.
Yeah.
Maybe a rotary texting that could handle that. So you work the iPad. Don't they just want to play games?
Well, actually, most of what senior citizens are interested in learning has to do with just connecting with the family.
Like email
and texting.
Send pictures.
And video conferencing, things like that, FaceTime.
So do they like FaceTime or Skype or Google Hangout?
Yeah, I mean, once we can, you know, get the hang of FaceTime, I think that's the most popular one, because they can actually see the face.
See their grandkids and stuff.
Exactly.
Now, for you, what's the most rewarding part of this?
Well, I guess just hearing all the different stories about, you know, how our help has been impactful in the lives of other families.
Right.
Every time that, you know, we're helping out a senior citizen learn something new, they kind of tell us the backstory of, you know, why they want to learn the device and how it's going to help them in the future. And I think that's just really great to hear. And also learn a lot about different like history and things like that. It's really interesting.
Now, for you, this is a nonprofit. Have you ever had a business that was a for-profit business?
Yeah, well, I've started a couple ventures in the past that haven't, you know, like taken off too much yet. Last summer, I went to this program at MIT for kind of like an entrepreneurship incubator, and we made a prototype for an automatic sunshade. So kind of the aluminum foil shield that you put on your car, but one that's automatic based on your location, based on your Bluetooth on your phone. So we're kind of still working on the prototype for that. And that's kind of the main other one that I'm doing right now. I also do some freelance coding, programming, development projects.
So you can make websites and apps and things like that?
Yeah. I have some paid projects on that, but not.
So you do that just to make money on the side?
Yeah, just for the knowledge. I really like computer science. I find it enjoyable. So, you know, might as well make money with it as well.
Now, you mentioned to me off air that you're going to Harvard, or is that for sure? Or you were accepted?
Yeah, I was accepted.
You haven't decided
yet? Yeah, I'm still looking.
So you could go somewhere else?
Yeah, I could go somewhere.
Or you might just bail on college, right?
Maybe.
Just do your own thing.
Possibly. Most likely not. But
now, if you were trying to persuade me to not go to college, what would be some of the reasons not to go to college if I had a brain as big as yours?
Well, first off, I would say you should go to college. I had, when I was at the program last summer, one of the professors like had a whole lecture just on why you should go to college and not
college. Well, he has a vested interest, you know, he's a professor at a college.
And then like a lot of entrepreneurs who we talked to a lot of entrepreneurs who skip college as well, and they wish they'd gone back mainly for the connections. And
so you think like,
because like if the business doesn't turn out.
The Facebook guy regrets.
Well, I mean, that's lucky. It's lucky.
That's lucky?
That's just a one-time thing. I think a lot of times, he's obviously very good, obviously Mark Zuckerberg, but I mean, usually if you have a business and you're like pretty sure, like you're confident that it's going to turn out, then obviously that would be the best not to go to college, because there's a lot of time, obviously, you have to put in.
Right. And you got to do stuff that, like right now, you're in your senior year of high school. You already know all this stuff.
Yeah. I mean, I don't find high school as useful as I know college will be, because I'll be able to focus a lot on more, you know, what I want to do.
That's what they're selling you.
Well, I mean, yeah, I think that, you know, if you have a business already that's taken off, you might as well consider dropping out. I know I was...
Techno Academy. This is gold. You're helping so many people.
I know. I'm going to... I think with the chapters program that we did, we're going to continue... We're definitely going to continue working on it as I go to college. We have some underclassmen, some freshmen, sophomore at my high school right now.
Right. You got to have a legacy, right?
Yeah, we do. And
you got a plan, succession planning? Mike will tell you all about that, how important that is.
Absolutely.
Yep. And even as I do continue to go to college, I'm going to continue working on some of our projects that we're going to do. And then, you know,
you're always going to tinker.
Yeah.
That's just the way your brain works, right?
Yeah, definitely.
And who knows when you're in this college, Harvard, MIT, did you get accepted in MIT? That's hard.
I didn't apply.
Why not? That was too nerdy.
Didn't find it as interesting to me as Harvard. Yeah. I mean, like I wanted to also like look into economics and computer science as well. And if you go to Harvard, actually, you can take any class at MIT that they offer. So it's like cross-registration.
It's just down the street.
Yeah.
Now, any other colleges? You keep mentioning Harvard, like they got this one in the bag. But
I applied to Stanford also.
There you go.
That's it.
Those two. Did you get in there?
I haven't heard back
yet. You don't know yet until March?
Yeah, April.
April?
Yeah.
So is that that's really where you want to go, right?
I mean, I don't know if I'll get in, but I have to like think about it some more.
I'm rooting for you.
Thank you.
So now if somebody wanted to learn more about Techno Academy, where can they go?
Yeah, we have a website that has a lot of info and then also kind of tutorials. If there's like senior citizens who want to learn online, we have that. It's www.technoacademy.org, and it's TechnoCademy. So a lot of people think it's like Techno Academy,
but there's not.
No A, yeah.
Exactly. And then for people in high school that are thinking about doing something entrepreneurial, what advice would you give them?
Yeah, I mean, just like really just try to think about something that interests you and
that you're passionate about.
Obviously,
right?
Yeah, that's like kind of cliche, but kind of when you're working, it's just you don't think about it as work, because I know a lot of high school is a really good indicator of that, because we do so many different subjects and everything, and a lot of time it's just completely not interesting. And if you're just doing it to get into college, then it's probably not going to be something that turns out well, because you'll lose interest and motivation pretty fast. And I think a good way to get into that is like high school clubs and organizations. There's a lot of different fields out there. And maybe, you know, I did FBLA in high school, and which is just Future Business Leaders of America. So it had a lot to do with entrepreneurship and, you know, kind of connecting like computer science or whatever your interest is to making a business. And I found that very rewarding and exciting. So that kind of led me on the path of business and entrepreneurship. So I say to high school students just to kind of get involved in a lot of different organizations and clubs and, you know, find out what interests you.
Good stuff. Good advice. Mike, you got anything to add to that? Smart kid, huh?
Yeah, definitely. For Josh, remember what Edison said. He goes, I never failed at anything. I just had 1,000 ideas that didn't work.
That's called learning.
Right. And Thomas Jefferson said, the harder I work, the luckier I seem to get. So
keep
those two in mind.
Hang in there. I'm going to go long on you. I'm going to bet the over on you. Mike, I don't know. He's got a lot of good things going, but he's kind of old. So, but I think he had a good upside. What do you think, Mike?
Absolutely.
All right, Josh. Thank you so much for being part of the show.
Thanks so much for having me.
This is Lee Cantor for all the Business Radio X family. We will see you all next time on Atlanta Business Radio.